To all who shall see these presents, greetings. I'm Adam Best. This is Veterans in the Wild.
Reveille, reveille, reveille. Welcome to our next show, ladies and gentlemen. We have a special guest here today. We have Joe Rosen. He is a 10-year Army veteran, our first Army vet on the show. We're happy to have him. You will learn a lot from our show today. He is someone who picked himself up, moved from the northwest up in Washington State all the way down to Florida, knew nobody, but in those 2 short years that he's been here, he has created one of the largest real estate teams in the state of Florida. So welcome, Joe.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. This is pretty awesome. Thank you.
Well, what you and I know and what no one else knows is that you and I didn't know each other 2 days ago. So we're actually kicking off a live show, which is a little different than me. I normally like to be a little more prepared, but I think this is going to be interesting to see where we go here.
I love live, baby. This is awesome. It's authentic. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's frightening. That's where I'm
it's
at.
It's frightening. Ah, it'll be a piece of cake.
So can you give us a little background of your time in the Army?
Yeah. I sold real estate back in Minnesota until I want to say 2009. And then I joined the military in 2009. And I was an Arabic linguist. So They send you out to Monterey, California for a year and a half. And they tell you that the odds of you succeeding are about this big. And if you fail, they get to pick whatever they want your job to be, which holy smokes, that's pretty motivating. So I learned Arabic in 63 weeks. You get 63 weeks to learn Arabic. And it was tough.
About a year, yeah.
I was just, because I'm the whitest dude from a white area. I don't even know what Arabic is, man. So when I got out there, I was like, man, this is quite a challenge. But I was excited. I was all just piss and vinegar and fired up and motivated. So I took it full on, man. And it was probably, I want to say you started about 8 a.m. and you go with the exception of a 1 hour lunch, you go till about 5 o'clock and then you got 2 hours of homework. It's intense stuff, man, but you come up with a pretty cool skill. So after that, got out of there and they send you to, you actually go to AIT after that. Cause they want to see if you're going to fail the language part first. So went to AIT. AIT was a piece of cake. Yeah. Yeah. So AIT was a piece of cake. And then after that, I went and worked at the National Security Agency, and just did nerd stuff that I can't talk about, but you can guess what we did over there, you know? And then after that, that was kind of the first half of my career was the NSA. And then the last half of my career, which was 4.5 years, was out at Joint Base Lewis-McChord out in Washington. And out there, I was a low-level voice intercept team lead. So we had a really cool team, a great bunch of guys. And really, we trained up for a solid 6 months, went to Afghanistan, did some cool stuff, and just came back. And then from then on out, they basically asked me, I was a staff sergeant at that point, do you want to stay in the Army? And I said, no, I plan on getting out, man. I got some big aspirations in the business end of it. And I had that yearning to get back into sales. I love real estate. I love sales. So they said, okay, if you're not going to do that, then we're just going to make you a trainer. And that's just going to, I was kind of like the old horse put out to pasture, and I just trained other horses and that was it. So that was basically it. That was my 10 years summed up in about 2 minutes.
It sounds very simple, but I'm sure those were intense days. And you had, did you select Arabic or was that the Army's need?
No, I picked the wrong branch, man. If you're in, and it changes all the time, but when I went, if you were in, I think it was the Air Force and the Navy, you got to pick maybe three languages and then you rated them 1, 2, 3, and maybe you got your number one, right? With Army and Marines, they were just like, you'll get what the hell we give you. And that's it. So I wanted Chinese, but I didn't know why I wanted Chinese. I got Arabic and I was bummed. But honestly, afterwards, there are a lot of people who know Chinese and there are a lot of Chinese who know English who can compete with us. There aren't a lot of Arab speakers who know English and there aren't a lot of English speakers who know Arab. So even though I'm probably not going to use it the rest of my life,
yes,
super cool language to have known.
Yes. I was going to ask if are you still proficient?
No, but I did just close on a real estate client. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things that made us connect was she was having a tough time with how she was being treated. She was Palestinian and, you know, she wore a hijab and she just felt that she was being discriminated against. So she had put a post on Facebook saying, hey, I'm looking for a new realtor. And I saw that in her Facebook profile, she had some Arabic written out. So I went and sent her a voice DM and I said, Marhaban, Siddiqati, kaifa haluk? And she got back to me. She's like, oh my gosh, you know Arabic? And then I kind of told her a little bit about my background. And instantly we connected, man. Two cultures came together and we connected. And that's how I got a deal done. So I guess it did come in handy once in my civilian life by accident.
I was going to ask, do you use that as a part of your business?
No, there are so few Arab speakers here on the Treasure Coast. And I think I found the one. So I think I'm tapped out. Till she wants to move, I think I'm tapped out, to my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, though, I mean, that's a niche that could be a very big advantage if, I mean, maybe Florida's not the place, but.
Yeah, and there are places in the nation, if that was something that I really wanted to do, that I could focus on. I'll tell you, though, man, learning a language was a grind. Like a lot of other things, it's not that tough to get good at it, but to be great at it, you have to stay with it. Like PT, right? It's not that tough to go out and run 2 miles. But if you want to run a 5.5 minute mile, dude, you got to be running every single day. You got to be thinking about it. You got to be eating the right way, sleeping. Like, you got to be doing everything. Yep. It's the same thing with language. It's not that tough to be okay with it, but to really maintain it well, you got to be doing it a lot.
Yes. And even 2 miles, I mean, we've both been out for a little while, so.
Yeah, I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about back in the day, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's be clear. Favorite military op when you were in?
Favorite military what?
The best thing you guys, the most fun you had doing your job.
Oh, not even close. It was when we went to Afghanistan. And just because, you know, when I was at the NSA, what we did mattered, but it was so tough to see that it mattered. Because you were doing a bunch of nerd stuff, right? You're writing up reports and translating things and whatever. And then you send it off to senators and congressmen, and they tell you how great you are, but you don't feel it. You don't see it. When you're in a combat zone, you see it. You see exactly what your efforts result in, and it's pretty damn awesome. And I'm, you know, I was an intel guy, but I've got the mentality of an infantry guy. I'm loud. I'm obnoxious. I had brothers growing up, so we had contests to see who could pee on the electric fence the longest. So that was my mentality, you know? So when we got to get out there and employ some of the things that we had really put a lot of effort into, and it was physical, and it was loud, and it was aggressive, and we were so close-knit. My little team was, I think it was 7 guys, and they're some of the best friends that I'll probably have the rest of my life. And I spent a lot less time with them, you know, maybe a year with those guys. Whereas some of the guys at the NSA, I spent 3 years with. But you're just sitting there writing reports and nerding out, man. Yep. It's so different. So for me, that's really the thing that I'm probably the most proud of, that I'll remember the rest of my life.
Yep. Yeah, that was something I talked about, was how much, like, the one, my big takeaway is definitely the people and how much more you're close with. For me, it was the people I was on ships with versus, you know, training commands, or yep. You remember like names from training commands, but I can tell you, you know, where Paul's from upon this ship. I can tell you where from Terry's from on this ship.
Yeah. You know,
all the details.
Different.
Favorite thing that the Army enabled you to do, I guess my example would be that I got to see Jerusalem because of the Navy, not somewhere I probably would have gone myself, but like, thank you.
Yeah. I know where my mind goes, but I don't think this is what you want. So I'll give you two. I think living in Monterey, California, right on the beach, where yes, a one bed, one bath, crappy house is $650. It's probably $800 now. That's pretty amazing. That's an area that you're not going to be able to live in unless you got some buku bucks. So we lived right on the ocean. It was stunning. And I was there for 2 years. And that was like the first year of me being married. And we didn't have kids yet. Perfect. So we were just like, and we didn't have any money, right? So dating for us was, let's go run on the beach and let's have little picnics. And like, oh, it was so much fun, man.
You don't realize how great you had it.
Well, how simple you had it. Yeah, we talked. Yeah, the simple. Yeah. We talked about it a lot. Like, this is probably the time we're going to appreciate the most in our life. Let's really live it up. And we did. Yeah. But yeah, once you have kids, it's all over. You don't matter anymore. So they're we got two little girls. They're 5 and 8 now. So we're just getting to that part where we can a little bit start to date again, which is kind of nice. But I'll tell you the thing I appreciate most, being in a business now and having a big team and really wanting to give them so much more than they'll ever be able to give me. The Army gives you leadership opportunities, endless leadership opportunities. If you're a go-getter, I mean, I remember sometimes I got more opportunities than I wanted. If you showed up and I was a staff sergeant, and I made staff sergeant in 4 years. So when I showed up, you'd have sergeants first class who just didn't want to do it. They were on year 18 and they were like, I don't let that guy do it. So mm-hmm. I would get all the leadership positions and I loved it. Like I said, man, I was all piss and vinegar. So for me, it was serious to me. Like I sat down, I was like, listen, guys, we need a plan. We need to commit to this plan. It's got to be a great plan. And we also need to know that our plan's not going to be perfect. So we got to constantly come back and improve on this plan. But it was really a serious, serious thing to me. And I took it to heart. And having all those skills and those opportunities and the ability to fail, because we all, man, is brand new. Is it E5 in the Navy when you first become an NCO? Or is it E4?
Yeah, it's a little different. E4, you become a petty officer.
Okay. So in the Army, it's a 5, unless you're a corporal, but yeah. For the most part, it's a 5. And I remember when I was a brand new sergeant, and we all do it, man. I sucked because I was like, you do this and you do pushups and you do, and all my guys, they would do it while I was there. But then when you turn your back, they're like, dude, that guy can go screw himself. Mm-hmm. So you really have to build those leadership skills to build the trust with your guys. And again, give them way more than they'll ever be able to give you so that when you turn your back, they want to impress you. They want to please you. They want you to be proud of them. And I would have never gotten those opportunities to fail, kind of succeed, you know, I would have never gotten that whole process had I not been in the Army. And that's made me such a better business person.
Well, I was going to say, and if you didn't have the Army, you would have done it on your own dime or in your own business.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of time, lots of money.
How is leadership different from the Army to a real estate business?
I can't smoke them, man. I try to make them do pushups, but I can't do it. But no, seriously.
You can. I mean,
you can. My guys, I might even be able to get them to do that.
You might have a lawsuit coming, but.
Yeah. So. Yeah, when you're in the military, you literally are the property of the military. You are a little robot and they do what they want with you. And if you're not on board, they can make you do things. I can't make any of my guys do anything. And they're all 1099, right? They're contractors. Yes. So you have to have carrots in place. You can't just beat them with the stick. And I think that's a good thing because I think a lot of average and below average leaders in the military just have this mentality that I got the rank, I can do what I want, you listen to me, and they come with the stick. And like I said, that only works as long as you're in their presence. As soon as you leave the room, they can't stand you and the production goes down. So you have to find ways to dangle those carrots, motivate them, come with the energy, and you have to come every single time. You got to be consistent every single time because whatever you are at your worst, that's the new So you have to show up. And I love that pressure, man. I love that. So really, it's just focusing a lot more on that carrot than the stick.
And so you're talking about like production metrics.
Sales. Yeah, motivation wise, right? Instead of, hey, if you don't get this done by Friday, you're not leaving base this weekend and you're going to come back on Saturday and get it done, right? That's really the stick. That. Yeah, instead of that saying, hey, I tell you what, we're on ABC split with me, so you're going to pay me X amount of dollars to be on my team. But I tell you what, if you get to this, I'll give you a bonus. I'll give you $2,000. How does that feel? Would that feel good? Like, that's a carrot, man. So I got to focus a lot more on the rewards and a lot less on the punishments.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Why the cross-country move?
So when we sat down, we're from Minnesota, my wife and I both. And when we joined the military, we went all over. We were in DC and we were in Texas and we were in Washington and we were in South Carolina. We were all over the place. So we got to see a lot of the world, which is really cool. You can see what you like and what you don't like, what you appreciate, what you don't appreciate.
Yes.
And my wife said, listen, I want ocean and I want heat. That's all I want. I don't care. So that kind of narrowed it down to Southeast Texas and then the Carolinas, Florida, you know.
Yes.
I'm going to offend all of your listeners from the South. There was no way in hell I was going to live in Louisiana, Mississippi, or Georgia. I'm not even going to say why. I think I've offended them enough. But I would do Texas, and my mom lives in Texas. But then I added to it, hey, we got little girls. So we got to have good schools. I want it to be a safe area. And I was also just getting out of the Army. So I wanted to start a business that was going to be tight. So I wanted a house that I could get I want to be in an area where I could get a house that was maybe 250 and I got a decent house. Now you can't get anything in Port St. Lucie for 250. But when I came down here, I was looking at like Fort Myers. A lot of the cities on the West Coast of Florida were awesome. But the house that I would want at a minimum was 350, 375. I thought, man, that's just a little more than I'm comfortable with. I knew I did not want to go to Miami. I'm not a Miami guy, man. I'm a hard worker. I'm not good looking enough to be in Miami. And then when you look at like Tallahassee, man, I'm going to offend more people. In Jacksonville, I literally started asking people from Florida, what do you think of those areas? And they're like, dude, that's like Southern Georgia. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not going to go to those areas. So we started looking at the Carolinas. My wife was like, dude, that's too cold. I don't want to go there. So we kind of got that out of there. Texas, I'm getting way too deep on this. Texas didn't have good enough schools. So really, Port St. Lucie checked all the boxes. They had ocean, right? You can go north or south, Fort Pierce or Stewart, and you got lots of beaches, beautiful beaches. Yep. There's 200,000 people in Port St. Lucie, which is great for business, but it feels like a 30,000 person town the way it's laid out. It's like a small town. And when you see the population's 200,000, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Yes.
It's safe. I tell people all the time that they'll come here from New York and they'll say, we're the good neighborhoods in Port St. Lucie. And I'll say, listen, there's higher end neighborhoods, lower end neighborhoods, but I've got a 5-year-old and 8-year-old girl. There's not a place in Port St. Lucie that I'd feel uncomfortable with my little girls. So I think it's such a safe area. Even the worst of the schools are B+ schools. They're good, solid schools. And I think they're improving. And I really like the people who are on the school board here. I think they've got a great superintendent. This area had it all. And it was such an affordable area. It's still one of the most, if not the most affordable, bigger cities in Florida. But holy smokes, it's picking up quick.
So it sounds like you guys came down and screwed everything up for us.
Yeah, it was all me and my family. We came down and just boom.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. You got it, no problem.
So we're gonna end the show there. And
thank you.
Yes, guys, we found the culprit.
It was me.
Yeah, even though you got here before I did.
Yeah. When did you get here?
About a year ago.
You did.
We've been coming down. I'm sorry.
Where did you come from?
Virginia. The Navy put me in Virginia about 15 years ago, and then finally made my escape too.
Your escape. Yeah, I hear you, man.
Virginia Beach is a great area in the same light, isn't that small town feel, very safe. For me though, it was like I was trying to close the chapter of the Navy.
Yeah.
But it's so much, I mean, every branch of the military is there. And that's awesome. You can still have the connection or you can still find that, but it's also very much like I wanted to put that out of my life, but it's still there. I worked for the civilian Navy for 5 years. It was
So what brought you here?
We honestly looked at it and we thought that our sons are, we have 2 boys that are 6 and 3. And we said we either had to move them before they got entrenched into one community and entrench them somewhere else. So it was time to either like do it now or wait until they're out of high school.
Yes.
So.
But why pick Port St. Lucie? You got family here?
Yeah, we've had family here and we've been coming here for 5 or 6 years on and off. So we've known the area.
Yeah.
And probably the same thing like you, like looked at other towns, wouldn't have gone to Miami, and same thing, safe city, and came to a lot of the same conclusions.
Yeah. I forget who wrote this. PC Times. It just came out this week, and it was an article that said since 2017, of cities that have a population of 100,000 or more, Port St. Lucie grew in home prices fourth most in the nation. Isn't that wild?
Considering I'm renting right now, yeah.
Even rental prices are going through the roof, man. We should probably, we got to hold this off until you re-up your rental contract there.
And so I know you guys all hold a magic eight ball for the housing market.
Of course.
So do you have a little preview or any thoughts? 2021, 2022.
I hear this question every single day.
I know.
Here are my thoughts, because I also sold in 2007, 2008 when the market went way south. I'm talking 40% plus. It's different. I do see prices skyrocketing, which is a lot like 2005, 6, which created a lot of 2008. But there were a lot of adjustable rate mortgages then, which, without getting into too much detail, means your payment's really low for 3 to 5 years. And then it goes way up. So a lot of people were buying in, let's say, 05, and then in 08, that payment went up. And they didn't maybe understand what they were getting into, or they just didn't ask enough questions. Or honestly, I don't think people don't understand. I think they get it. I think they get so excited and they say, that's 3 years away. We'll figure it out.
Yep. But
3 years?
I'll get that promotion.
Like that. Yeah, exactly.
We'll still be married.
Yes. Yep. So we had a lot of that. We had a lot of people getting either 100% loans or 97% loans. So when you get 100% or a 97% loan and the market dips 4%, which is a pretty minimal dip, you're already upside down. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. If you're getting a 10, 20% down loan, the market can dip 4% and you're still on the positive end. It sucks. It doesn't feel good. But if you get into a bind and you got to move, or you want to move, or you get a job opportunity, you can make those moves. So when we saw a little bit of a dip, all of a sudden people were upside down. They couldn't go buy that four wheeler. They couldn't go on the vacation because people were pulling cash out of their house left and right. So even a lot of people who had the 10% down, they would wait a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then they'd start pulling that equity out and go do all those fun things and buy all the toys. I'm telling you, man, if I went on 50 listing appointments in 2008, 47 of them, the price I told them was lower than the price that they owed. And there were a lot of tears, a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. I would walk in and they'd instantly, how does a short sale work? And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. So it was a lot of that. Down here, I'm seeing a lot of New York money, New Jersey money, California money. They're selling their home for $700,000-$900,000. Mm-hmm. They're coming down here and they're buying for cash something that's $300,000-$500,000. So even if the market dropped 50%, they're still fine. It sucks, but they're fine. So I think that when we see, if we see a little bit of a dip in the market, it's not going to have the same impact. We've also got record low rates. And although this has slowed down, we have really benefited here in South Florida because we're perceived as the most open state for COVID. So all the people in restricted states like New York and California, New Jersey, they, the small business owners especially, were looking at it saying, I'm going to go bankrupt if I stay here. So they were flooding down here at the rate of 1,000 people a day into Florida, and they were heavy cash or all cash, and they took our markets and just, man, they went up quick. So if you already had a place, it was awesome because a lot of people grew $100,000 in a year or two. Yep. But I don't think we're going to have that same influx over the next 12 months because now all states are kind of opening up. So I think that'll soften. So I think we're probably going to see more of a plateau than a dip. And if we see a dip, I think it's going to be pretty minimal.
Okay. Sounds good. So we said you moved from Washington State to Florida. No family, no ties, no like, oh, I got a business partner down here.
You didn't know a soul.
And I've owned a business before. I used to be an insurance agent back in Virginia. And day one of business, you turn the lights on and you got to pay for them.
Yeah. And you have no money.
Yeah.
No income.
So how do you do that?
Well, I had a lot of motivation, and I'm huge into, I constantly think about when I'm 83 years old and I'm on my deathbed, I want to be so proud, so content, so fulfilled with everything I did. And I want to create that, right? So for me, the bigger the story, the more exciting the ride, like, let's do it. So to go to a place that's completely across the country where I don't know a soul, that's a pretty damn good story. So I was excited about building that story. I also am huge on preparation. So I knew 18 months out when I was in the military, I knew 18 months out, I'm getting out. So when I was done every day at whatever it was, 5:30, 6 o'clock, I would come home and that's when I would start building up my social media. I knew I can't call anybody in Port St. Lucie. Even if you want to buy a house, I'm not licensed, you know, so can't do that. So I just started building up my social media. That was the one thing I controlled. So I started my YouTube channel, The Joe Rosen Show. I started my Instagram, and I think I'm over 20,000. I don't even know what you call them, followers. Facebook, I'm maxed out. I think I'm constantly at like 4992, and then I got to go delete people. And oh, I hate that they limit you to 5. And then I built my business page, and we just got all of that kind of going. And I started doing kind of the same thing you're doing, you know, just kind of reaching out to guests and trying to get people on that I thought my audience would be interested in. And for me too, a big part of my content was focusing on two things: documenting my journey, because it's interesting. It's just interesting. I mean, we were talking a little bit about your audience, you know, and what are they looking to do? And I think it's really cool as if vets are a big part of your audience, to see a story like mine. So you can look at your individual life and say, okay, cool. Oh, I can steal that. That's something I'm going to implement into my own life. Right. So that's why you do it. So I want to document to help others. Right. I'm also just obsessed with delivering more value to people than they can ever deliver to me. So I was consistently putting out videos like, top three things to look at when you're going through a home inspection. Top three things to negotiate when you're a buyer. Top three things you should be asking your listing agent. And I was just making videos over and over and over with the intent of delivering value. And I couldn't even ask you for anything. You could say, Joe, I want to sell my $1 million home with you. And my reply would be, awesome. I'm on the other side of the country and I'm not licensed. So good luck. So it was an awesome position to be in, because it was clear that I was not trying to gain any profit. I was just trying to add value. So I built great relationships, a great community here in Port St. Lucie, really through Facebook. My YouTube and Instagram kind of back it up. But that's what I did, man, is I just built all that up and I put that 18 months. I was probably putting 15 hours a week into that outside of my full-time Army job. And I was a leader and I had a family. So I was doing all that. And when I hit the ground here on day one, I had 31 appointments scheduled over the next, whatever it was, 2-3 weeks. I was ready to go. But what I see, I'm getting a little beyond your question here. I remember going to, I forget what they call the last, it's all the little courses you get when you're in your last like 3 to 6 months of the military. I don't know if it's an Army thing or all the military, but whatever that class is called.
Transition class to help you be a civilian.
Yeah. But I remember those kids would walk. I say kids because I was older. I felt like I was older than everybody. They would all walk in and you'd get the old guys, right? Like the crusty old sergeants major and the colonels. Those dudes didn't give a damn because they're so old and they got so much money. They're going to be fine. They don't care. But for the guys who were in their 20s, 30s, 40s, who should have been paying attention, there was only one or two paying attention. There weren't a lot of people taking notes. And I love doing things like this because I see, now I'm a little biased here, but, and I got high standards, but I really, one of the cool things about the military is they take care of you, and they should. I'm putting my life, my family's life, my safety, my time all on the line to make an okay wage and always know that my family has food and shelter and that's in insurance. And that's awesome. That's awesome. But I forgot where I was going with that. I got so excited about that. Oh, I know what I'm saying. I wanted to go back to the people in these classes, right? But they take so good care of you. Like they do such a great job at it that a lot of times, especially if you get into the military at 18, 19, 20 years old, when you get out, you're so babied by the military, you don't know what to do. And you don't know how to pay your bills. You don't know what a checkbook is. You don't. And it's like, you don't. So I see a lot of these guys in those classes and they don't have a notebook. They don't have a pen. And I'm thinking, dude, what are you doing? This is it. The Army's, they literally paid civilians money and you're a paid soldier, whatever, airman in these classes. You're getting paid to sit in a class to help you as a civilian. Who does that? Only the military. Use it, but they don't. They look at it as I get to dress up in jeans and a t-shirt and eat my beef jerky and drink my Mountain Dew and just not pay attention to this guy up front. And I think, man, so I like doing these shows because I want people to see that you can do that and you can be average or maybe even below average, but dude, you can be amazing too, but you got to put a lot of effort in. You got to put prep in. And again, I go back to that story that I'm trying to build my story for myself when I'm 83 years old on my deathbed. I want my grandkids around like, dude, grandpa was a badass. That guy put so much effort in. It was amazing. Every time you saw him, it was so much energy, so much love, so much effort. He put everything he had into everything he did. Man, he's a cool guy. I want to create that. And that's what I'm thinking about every single day.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's important to have your why. The two things I heard from the story, I'm hearing more of the theme of this is how long in advance you had to start with the preparation.
Big time.
And I think that's one lesson the audience really needs to hear is you started 18 months in advance. I don't think people realize 15 hours a week for a year and a half is the only reason. Like if you did that 6 months in advance, you probably didn't hit the ground running. You probably weren't that successful. And you probably, how much that is a snowball effect.
Yeah. I think too, it's really easy to mentally tell yourself, and it happens like that, right? It's all a conscious, or I should say maybe even sometimes a subconscious thing that'll go through your mind, procrastination, right? I don't need to do 18 months like that crazy guy. I'll just do 6 months, or I'll just do 3 months, or I'll do whatever. But what happens is once you start getting busy, I can't do all the things that I had 18 months to do while I was in the Army. I don't have the time to do it. I'm busy. So if you don't do it and you start to get a little busy, I see guys who are busy and they don't have the systems and the checklists and the organization and the everything in the background that I've got. And it's not because I'm any smarter than them. It's because I set it up when I wasn't busy so that once I am busy, I'm ready to go. So it really takes a mature mind to get in there and get all that preparation done before you take off.
Yep. Sorry. And the other thing I heard was, oh, there's a book, Steal Like an Artist, and you sort of touched on it, but I think one thing I would ask you is talk a little bit, please, about stealing other concepts, taking what worked from other people, and how much you integrate that into your own business, or how much there's no reason to reinvent the wheel, I guess, is what people need to also understand. You don't have to create the business. It's pretty much already done. You just have to put your spin on it.
Yeah. And I mean, look at the military. For a long time, one of the toughest jobs I probably ever had was the NCOIC of ops for a battalion. Mm-hmm. And it was the first job I got. So when I was at the NSA, right? Nerd world, you're only allowed to do one military thing, training, whatever, other than PT, a quarter, because the NSA said, you're not taking our people. Because the NSA pays for all of your language training, right? Yep. So once you come there, they're like, the military is that fun hobby you've got. You're at NSA. So you only do one military. So when I got out to Washington, I was a staff sergeant. And I got there and they're like, you're going to be the leader of ops. And I was like, what's a Humvee? Like I'd never seen a Humvee before, right? Yeah. And so I had to have soldiers teach me how to do maintenance on a vehicle because I had no idea about these basic, simple things. Yet I got thrown into this position and they're like, Rosen, you've got all the excitement in the world. You'll figure it out. And I did figure it out. Right. But you really had to have that excitement to do, man, what was your question again? I get so excited about these answers.
How you've stolen from other people or seen something that works in another business.
So anytime you go into a position like that, one requirement is you have to build your policy manual before you leave. And really, you got to start it on day one. And your leadership is constantly harping on you. When they meet with you every month, Rosen, where's your policy manual? Do you have everything that this position does? And what does this position do? And what does this position do? And if you don't, guess what? You're staying late and you're going to get it done, right? You need to do the same thing in your business. And you're not, like you said, Renat, you can recreate the wheel, but why would you? Somebody way smarter who's failed way more than you to figure out what the answer is,
yes,
already figured it out. Just steal it, put your little spin on it, and employ it, man. And it's the same thing. One of the biggest reasons I went to the brokerage that I'm with isn't because of the splits or the caps or the money or the any of that stuff. It really was because I had two big team leaders who had big successful teams that were ran completely different from each other. And they were both at that company. And the deal I made with them was, if I come, I want you to open up everything to me. I want to see it all. I want to see all the things that you're like, I really wish I hadn't done this because I failed at it. And this really rocked. And this is, you know, great. This makes me a lot of money. I lost a lot of money on this. I want to see it all. And I want you to consistently, every 2 weeks, give me 45 minutes. And I want to walk through and I want accountability. And I want to tell you where I'm at. And I want you to critique what I'm doing. And so really my whole business is taking those two teams. And now it's more because I've got more friends in the business. And just masterminding, right? Going through and saying what's working for you, what's not working for you, and stealing all the good parts to build what they've already got. But it took them 15 years and I'm able to do it in two because, like you said, I'm not recreating the wheel. I'm taking all the things that they did. I put my little Rosen spin on it, but that Rosen spin takes 10 minutes to add. It doesn't take me 3 days to build. Yes. So I'm moving so much faster because of that. So that's a phenomenal point.
Yep. And I mean, one of the things, we're an example of this right now. I mean, I sort of did the same thing a week ago. I said, okay, we got the Army's birthday coming. I want to do a show. I need an Army veteran. So I asked the question. We connected. I didn't know you a week ago, and here we are making a podcast.
Yeah.
So that's what I've found is definitely, if you ask for help, people are always willing to help, because once you get into the circle, the right circle, people are always, you know, they've been helped, they're willing to help other people, and then get into just a whole different group of people. Now I'm just redundantly saying willing to help.
Yeah. Getting that circle of people. I mean, they always say you are the five people that you hang around with the most, right? Yes. And five is, you know, a cliche number. It could be seven, it could be three, it could be whatever, but getting in that circle is really important. And I would add to it, it's also important. Like, you could put that post out and completely failed. Maybe you would have had nobody respond to you, right? I think so many people think of that and they're like, oh, I just don't want to put that post out, man. And I just think, no, like all my guys, I tell them, your job is to fail as fast as you can. So you'll find that success as quickly as you can.
Yep.
Once you fail once, that's good. I want you to fail once at everything. But then you need to create something so you never fail at that thing again. If you fail twice at the same thing, that's on you. But I want you to fail once. So I think it's awesome that you're putting yourself out there and doing that. That's exactly what you need to do in business, man. Just do that with everything.
Yep, absolutely. Most significant, like, personal memory from the Army? Yeah, we're going to the feels now.
I mean, yeah, it absolutely would be. I'm looking at it right now. I've got a little plaque of my team, and I've got the bottom of my boot, and it's still got Afghanistan dirt on it. And that's part of my little plaque up there, right? And it's got my award and all that stuff. Just that year with those guys, and not just Afghanistan, but the months prior to, where my leadership trusted me to say, I'm not going to be here this week. We're going to go in the woods, and all we're doing is training. And they trusted me, and we did it, and we trained hard, and they did it, and it sucked. And some of these guys were not in good shape. Some of them weren't in good shape up here, but they all trusted me, and they did it. And in the end, it was so cool to see all these guys. Some guys were here and they got to hear. Some guys were here and they got to hear. But all of them got better. And that was really a big part of me being addicted to taking people and just furthering them. If you want to be bigger, if you want to be better, if you want to be smarter, if you want to be more savvy in business, whatever it is,
yep.
Dude, let's go. Let's do it. And if you're committed to me, I am committed to you. Let's go. And for me, that's become an addiction. That's why as big of a pain in the butt as it can be sometimes to run a real estate, any team, any business, yep. Man, I can't tell you how many single agents are like, I did the team thing. It sucks. I don't want to be a babysitter. That's true, but it's not a money thing, man. I'm addicted to taking people from here and getting them to here. And there was no better example of that than that year-ish that we spent in Afghanistan.
How good does it feel to come home after that year? Be back on U.S. soil?
Dude, amazing. Amazing. I remember the tipping point for me in deciding I was getting out, because I wasn't going to get out. I was going to keep going for 20 years.
Yes.
Was when we were essentially chasing Taliban the whole time. Wherever they were, the Afghans would say, hey, pretty please come help us. And whoever yelled the most, that's kind of where we went, right? But you would be out there with 30 to 100, I don't know how many guys we had. It depended on the mission and where we went and everything else. But it wasn't a lot of people. Let's say on average it was 60. It wasn't a lot of people. Just your little group. And it was the same 60-ish people that went on every damn mission. And you'd set up your little camp. And you get everything fortified. You get comms. You get all your stuff going. And you were disattached from everything else. Your cell phones didn't work. You didn't have internet. You didn't have anything. You just had a lot of dirt and you had your dirty, smelly buddies, and that was it. And combat isn't that exciting 97% of the time. It's pretty damn boring. It's only exciting 3% of the time. And honestly, well, that's not true. I was going to say you don't really look forward to it, but sometimes you do, man. You get so damn bored. But so when you're out there, you're so disconnected. So they would come in and they would bring us a phone and we get a certain amount of time, everybody get in line, and then you get your time on the phone, right?
Yes.
And I remember you'd have a line and I was a leader again. So I'd stand at the phone and you'd tell this guy, you got 3 minutes, you got 3 minutes, you got 3 minutes. Dude, that was the worst job on the planet, man. Yep. Because these guys, you'd have to tell them and I'm not in any way insulting. I get it, but they weren't managing their 3 minutes. So they get to 2 minutes and 55 seconds. And I'd be like, and I'd have to pull the phone out of their hands and hang it up. And it was not fun.
Yep.
And I remember my time calling my family and having my little girl bawl. And I knew, like, my 3 minutes is going to be up and I'm not even able to respond to this. And I'd have to hang up. And I remember thinking, like, I get it. And this is all fair. I asked for this. This is what I wanted. And I'm proud to have done that. But I did my time. I'm happy I did my 10 years. Very proud of that. But now I've got a bigger responsibility. And that's my two little girls. So that was kind of what pulled me out of it. Yeah. Man, that is such a vivid memory.
Well, and that's what I was saying too, is I know you couldn't possibly do 3 minutes in 1 second. You could, because you were on your own timer, but there's no way in hell you could possibly. Oh yeah. He gets longer time with his family. Of course.
No. You're the leader. If anything, I got to do 2.5. There's no way. Yeah. You can't do that. You know, I've told that story quite a few times. It's funny. Everybody in the military is like, yep, get it. Everybody outside the military is like, well, you were the leader, so you got a little extra time, right? I'm like, dude, that's not how it works, man. You get if anything, it goes the other way. Yeah. Yep. They're watching you.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this, Joe. I learned a lot about the Army and particularly what you've taken from it and how you turned it into a successful real estate business.
Well, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you having me on. I think what you're doing here is super cool, man. I can see your intent, and it's to help other vets. And vets do have so many cool things about them and their lives and the compromises they're making. It's amazing that we have people willing to compromise that much for the safety of the rest of us just over here having a good time enjoying our lives, right? But it's great to have outlets like you where they can go and they can actually further themselves if they just spend a little time and learn. So I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, every show's been unique and it's definitely educational.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe.
Have an amazing day.
Yep, you too.